on that delightful note.
Want to talk about death worms?
Honestly, yeah. Yeah, I do. I would really like to talk about death worms. I feel like I could use some death worms right now. And
death and dying.
It's all gonna happen to
my
you.
My little Italian hands.
That's like this is how you do the, it's you hold the death worms and then you shake the death worms. That's how you do it.
Like little maracas.
Yeah. Exactly. They're like a little maracas. No, there's like Spanish. What was I doing? I was doing Italian. Yeah, Italian. Yeah, Italian people can have maracas.
I'm sure they, yeah, they can have them. Or like the little hand shakers, like the little egg ones, like those things. Percussion-based instruments, we all have them.
I was going to say, yeah, it doesn't really matter. We can all use them. At any rate, hello, everybody. This is Peculiar Pairings. We did
it. Woo!
That was long and weird. My name is Matt.
I am Celine. Hello.
Hello. This is our little show where Celine tells us a cool, dark, sometimes funny and scary story. And then we have a little treat and we have a drink and we maybe share some laughs and some tears, but we have a good time.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us.
Yes. Welcome. And as I stated earlier, we are talking about death worms.
Yes. But what kind of death worms?
The Mongolian death worm.
Ooh, it sounds extra spooky somehow. I don't know why. That's
it kind of, you know, does.
Well, yeah, because didn't China build the Great Wall of China to keep out Mongolians?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's so like
to so keep out Attila the Hun and yeah, I think Genghis Khan.
That's not yeah.
So the Huns and the Mongols.
Yeah. So when you hear about, when you tack Mongolian onto something, it suddenly feels extra threatening somehow, which is not like a knock to Mongolians. I'm just saying that, like, if you say death worm, it somehow feels heightened when you say Mongolian death worm.
Agreed. That's like, I don't know if you've ever experienced listening to Mongolian metal.
No, what?
Yes, my husband has lots of diverse music tastes in the world of heavy metal. So I
when
get
you mentioned
the joy
him, I was less surprised. He does seem to have some fairly unique and eclectic tastes in a lot.
He does. So in that there is a, I think it's metal anyway. There's a band he listens to that's Mongolian and they only sing in Mongolian. So he has, like, if he wants to know what they're saying, he has to like look up the translation. But like he'll listen to that and it sounds very similar to like what they have in, we've recently been getting into Vikings.
Oh,
on Netflix,
yeah.
What they have for like the music for the opening, it's very similar to that, like feel.
Okay. Kind of like big, heavy beats and like loud drums.
Yes.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah.
And it's, I don't know at what point makes it metal. I don't know.
Right.
As someone who does not listen to metal, at least not frequently or of my own volition.
Sure.
I do not know. But it sounds cool as far as like the music itself. Not sure it is something I would listen to myself, but at the same time, it somehow sounds more menacing than regular metal music to me.
And I will say, is Mongolia still a place?
It yes. Didn't get
like, okay, well then we would like to apologize to any Mongolian listeners. When I was talking about like it suddenly sounds more menacing, I thought that I was thinking of like the Mongolian horde of the past that was like terrorizing a continent.
Well, and I think part of what made them so fearsome is that it was not just men, it was men and women, and I think that scared people because they are also so much of the world was so used to only having men in battle and stuff, which is why this is gonna be the craziest connection here. Whenever, and you're never gonna unsee this, in Mulan, yes, the Disney film, when Mulan is fighting the Huns because they had women in their military, or just like another soldier. Great. Mm-hmm. This soldier is a nuisance. This one specifically. Not because she's female, not because of the, because she was a good soldier. That was it. And does okay. not bat an eye when he's like, a woman? Oh no. Because they're like, yeah, we have women in our army, so.
Which is, yeah, the kind of irony of, like, the Mongolians would treat her more equally on the battlefield yeah. than her yeah. own.
Than her yeah, own than, like, people. Mulan's.
Right, right, right. That is interesting. Well, and hey, you got more numbers then. Like, why wouldn't you?
Yeah. So that's my little fun fact for the day.
Well, and interestingly enough that you would tie it to the Vikings, because didn't Vikings also do that? Didn't they have yeah. women in there? Yeah.
The shield maidens.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. Real quick, shout out to anyone who hasn't watched it. Watch Killer of Killers on Hulu. It's very good. It's kind of a little sort of vignette thing, and the first one starts with a shield maiden. It's badass. It's very good.
Ooh.
Yeah. If you're into kind of anime-styled action stuff with predators, it's quite good.
Good to know.
Yeah. But we are not talking about the predators this week. We were talking about Mongolian death worms, which I had no idea what it is. And I feel a little bad for this pairing because I feel like the last one we did was challenging, but still well linked enough. So I feel like this one is maybe just a little too off kilter in terms of relation, but we'll see how you do with your guesses. The treat that we have is just your basic sort of cinnamon toast. Put some sugar and some cinnamon together on a loaf of bread and it's delicious. Butter it up and yeah, and the drink is a sort of twist on a classic dry martini, which my understanding is usually just vodka and dry vermouth.
Yeah,
which I tried that before I went on to do what we did, and I am not a dry martini guy. I'll tell you that.
I am not either. It is a little much for my taste, which we'll definitely talk about more later.
Well, and I was originally just going to go with that, and then I tested it the other day, and I'm like, oh, no. I'm like, I don't think either of us wants that. So we did a little twist, which I still don't think worked well enough, but this one includes a shot of vodka, a shot of spiced rum, like a half a shot of vermouth, and then a splash of lemon or lime juice, and it's still not great, in my opinion. But yeah. Slightly more palatable, maybe.
A little bit. It is not something I am ever going to seek out again. I won't tell you that. No.
Well, but, and there's a reason that I have had the same bottle of dry vermouth like since we started this podcast. Yeah. So for years, because I don't seek out any recipes that have that, and it's a weird flavor. Yikes. But with all of that, Celine, how do you think that these tie into this topic?
So I figured both with the toast and the drink being a dry martini, that it has to do with the fact that the deathworm lives in the Mongolian desert.
Huh.
And sand. I was thinking, toast with like the cinnamon and sugar, that it is kind of like a sandy desert. So I'm like, oh, it's just dry, arid, desert themed. That is where it lives.
So,
of going off of like the idea of Dune, that like everything is in the sand.
Yes, that 100%. That was first of all, you already had a better answer than I thought, because I kept focusing on Mongolian something, and I'm like, I don't know what to do. Like I don't want to make it like too complicated. And so I'm like, I spent like a day thinking about Mongolian stuff. Then I'm like, wait, why not think about the worm thing? And I'm like, yeah, death worm. I'm like, that sounds like fucking Dune. And if you put sugar and cinnamon together and you sprinkle it on toast, it looks like a spice that's in the sand. It looks got this kind of, sort of sparkly look to it.
Yeah.
But I love that, like I said, yours was much better, where it's like, well, yeah, it's dry, it's arid, and you're essentially sprinkling sand on it, like where a worm would live. And I'm like, oh, see, you did it in a reality sort of way. I went right to high fantasy sci-fi bullshit. But I will say, there is a little bit more to the drink in the sense that, well, because, yeah, I looked up a little bit of stuff, and once again, it was a bunch of ingredients that we don't have access to and I don't know how to make. And so I,
not surprising.
Yeah. And, but I happened upon a recipe that, indicated, and I'm not sure how like accurate this is, but supposedly, a lot of people in the past throughout the history of like the Mongolian Empire and stuff enjoyed something very much akin to a traditional dry martini. They had they had their own kind of vodka that was made out of fermented wheat, I think, instead of like, okay. I think traditionally it's potatoes.
Instead of potatoes, yeah.
Right, right. And so they created their own kind of vodka, which before I told you what we were doing, I did look for in the store. I'm like, just in case we can find this. It's some kind of Khan vodka, like K-H-A-A-N, and I couldn't find it anywhere. So I'm like, we're just going to go with the regular thing. Yeah, so I was just shocked that that was part of their thing. So I'm like, okay, we'll go with the martini. And then, yeah, after trying the traditional dry martini, I'm like, let's add some, let's continue the spice theme and go with some spiced rum to hopefully even it out a little bit. And it didn't work, but okay.
We tried. The effort was there.
Yeah, yeah. We'll talk more about how we feel about that later.
Yes. So my sources for today are a couple articles from Wikipedia, LifeScience.com, and DiscoveryUK.com. So as I mentioned earlier, the death worm lives in the Gobi Desert, and I do have to do a quick shout out. I got the idea from the death worm from my time working at Blue Moon. We had a cryptid book.
No kidding.
And when we were really bored, when it was really slow, we would pick out random cryptids and do Who Would You Rather Do? Cryptid Edition. And we would pull front of house and back of house. And the Mongolian death worm was on there at one point for what I cannot remember. But I was like, oh, I should actually write down some of these cryptids in this book because these are good. And like, I don't know if I would necessarily find all of these on my own. So shout out to my Blue Moon homies for that fun adventure.
I don't mean to put you and your Blue Moon team on the spot. I do need to just make sure to clarify. You mean like do as in like take to bed?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. No, I think what the vision I have of a death worm in my head would, I feel like would be more applicable to activities in the bedroom than certain other cryptids for sure.
I mean, we also had a version of who do you think you would survive? And that was like a Sharknado versus other cryptids. We're like, this is not one that truly makes sense. Like one was like a mega earthquake.
Yeah, but I was going to say, but now you guys are just, this isn't in the book. You guys are just throwing stuff out there.
No, that was actually in the book.
A Sharknado is not a cryptid. Nor is an earthquake. What?
No, it was a book of like cryptids and other like survival things. It was a survival book, which is like the funnier part.
Oh, okay. So if I may, it was sort of a fictionalized kind of thing of like how to survive this thing. Like it's written as if someone has like adventured out and survived all of the, like Bear Grylls. It's like Bear Grylls.
Yes.
But like, okay.
But with like mostly cryptids and then extreme events like Sharknado.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay. Now that does sound a lot more fun. And now I'm curious to see how well the death worm would fare in terms of like a competition like that. Like how deadly can they be?
Very deadly from what I understand.
Now I'm excited.
So the death worm, as far as I am aware, there is no evidence of it existing. So it is one that has been unsighted, but they have investigated this creature by both amateur cryptozoologists and credentialed academics. So everybody is looking for this death worm. Just about.
So but at this point it is still classified like as a cryptid in terms of being a mythological or like straight up fictional creature.
Yes.
Okay.
And the first appearance of this creature is in Roy Chapman Andrews' 1926 book on The Trail of Ancient Man.
Okay.
He described the Mongolian death worm from secondhand tales of the monster that he had gathered during his time in Mongolia from different people, just like different groups of people, whether it's like villages, cities, or like different, like more nomadic tribes, since a lot of Mongolia in the past has been very nomadic and kind of like more mobile.
Mm-hmm. So they've crossed the land that they traversed like a number of times. So they've, okay, I can see how he found that to be like a good source of information. Because like, well, they move around a lot. They've probably seen this thing a number of times. Okay.
And it's kind of like, I guess more akin to like the types of tales that you would listen to like around the campfire, where it's like tales about X, Y, and Z creature that lives in the woods. And that there are going to be handfuls of people who say that they have seen or that like they know someone who's seen it, but there's no evidence to show that like they know that this creature exists.
Right. Okay. So it is absolutely locked in as like solid, like cryptid territory. It's very much like a chupacabra.
Yes. Although there was in 1983 a specimen of the Tartar sand boa. And they showed that to locals and they're like, oh yeah, that's the same thing as like this death worm, like this snake. Oh,
okay.
And the death worm are the same. And I can see how they got there based on what this snake looks like, and that it is different from most snakes in that it has like a more stout body and the tail is shorter and more round.
Okay, so it looks more like a scrub.
Short tail. Yeah.
Yeah, okay, interesting. So yeah, it doesn't really look like a snake, but they... Okay. They've consistently called this sort of grub-looking thing, like, the death worm?
So they believe that it is possible that the sand boa and the death worm are the same, if not very similar.
Gotcha.
So there are differences that are like very distinct differences, which I will get into, but they're like, oh yeah, it looks like that.
Okay. Okay.
Doesn't mean it is like the exact same creature, but they're like, yeah, it looks like that.
Well, I mean, the kind of the hallmark of a cryptid is you can't ever actually have a full specimen of it. You just have to be like, well, it sort of looks like this.
Yeah. And is also the death worm is also considered one of the most sensational cryptids in the world.
What, it has like an album coming out or something, or it's like it's,
you know,
it's playing a Super Bowl.
I think outside of the rise of Mothman and the Chupacabra, the Mongolian death worm would probably be pretty up there.
Really? Oh, well, now I feel bad that I've never heard of it before.
I felt the same way. It's like, oh, it's like super famous. I'm like, apparently not in America.
Well,
we have like Bigfoot, Mothman, Chupacabras right next door off of Mexico, probably also living in like New Mexico and Texas.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and normally, you know, you can kind of chalk that up to just how many people we have here and how much land we have, where like, but I mean, Mongolia, especially depending on the time period, was huge. So it's like,
Mongolia is still huge.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. But I guess it's, we have a strange way of like picking and choosing what parts of other cultures that we like embrace, it seems. So I guess we just never, we're like, look guys, we've got, depending on how you count North America, we've got the Chupacabra and we've got, you know, like you said, the Loch Ness monster, Jesus. We have Wendigos and shit and we got Bigfoot. We don't need any more cryptids. Okay.
We have a lot. So this worm has been described as looking like a 2-foot long sausage and it has no head or legs. It's like very much like a giant worm and can measure up to a meter. So about 3 feet long.
Damn. Okay.
And there's quite a few different descriptions as to what its skin looks like, that it's dark red in color, more fleshy. Some say that it's more of like a white gray smooth color, but then turns red when it's really angry. And some say that it's brown and scaly. So worm needs to hydrate, obviously. I was gonna say,
those are two very stark contrasting descriptions of this thing. I do like the just kind of like 3-foot sausage description, where like, because if you've ever seen like a, if you've ever had just like a ring sausage before you like chop it up or something, and then imagine if it was alive and it was like crawling towards you like a, because like even if it doesn't feel threatening, like it's literally like a,
well,
a,
I'd 100% be smashing that thing with a frying pan if it could.
Absolutely. Yep. It's
one forced object.
Yep. Just you want to make it. Hit it till it's not moving, and then you put it back in the frying pan. Season it up.
Yeah. Serve it for breakfast.
Hell yeah. Breakfast and worm.
Most versions of stories about it suggest that it's more active when it rains, which
does fit with worms.
Very much sounds like a worm. When it rains, they all like pop out of the ground, because I'm trying to remember what all of the reasoning behind it is. And that, well, like,
I think they can't breathe. Like, I think they mostly, the ground gets so saturated with water that they can't get oxygen, so they have to surface.
It has to do.
That's also why I felt so bad as a kid when we would go fishing, and it's like you put a worm on a hook and you throw it in the water, and it's like, what are we doing?
Drowning them.
I know. Like, at least a leech can, like, that's its environment. But yeah, that worm, I'm always like, you poor bastard. Get me a fish. Yep.
And it is believed that because of its living environment, that its skin is not quite fleshy, but more like a scaly snake or lizard type of exterior versus human skin fleshy.
I keep forgetting that they're in like a desert. A traditional like nightcrawler, as we would call it, would not survive in a desert for a moment.
No. It is also believed to be a vertebrate type animal, and that it has a spine.
Right.
It also has spike-like projections on both ends of it. So it spends most of its time beneath the desert, and I believe it uses that to like navigate. I'm not sure.
Okay, for anyone who's seen Tremors, we're in like Graboids territory. Let's like what they have these little like spiky things. Yes. They're just a little smaller than the actual Graboid
things. Yeah. And usually whenever one is spotted lying on the surface, locals will avoid that area.
Sure.
Because they're like, we know that there's one over there. We're not going over there.
Mm-hmm. Well, and especially like you would assume that if it surfaced, these strike me as the kind of creatures that wouldn't just stay out in the open very long. So if you see one there, you're like, something fucking bad happened over there.
Yeah. It has 2 or even 3 rows of razor sharp teeth. Oof. Fun.
Yeah, it's always good.
It is considered to be so poisonous that touching it would mean instant death.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. If you saw one on the surface, stay away from it. Because like, even if it's dead and you just like tripped on it, you're like, I just immediately disintegrate. No thanks.
And if that doesn't kill you, it'll kill you from a distance too.
No, can it shoot spine things?
It can spray venom at its prey, or it can electrocute you.
Okay, come on. You can't have both. Usually that's what I love about cryptids, where it's like they kind of start just becoming like kindergarten superhero descriptions, where it's like, well, my guy can fly super high and he can see in the dark and he can also see through walls, and you're like, yeah, well, my worm can spray poison. He's like, well, I'll blow your poison away. And he's like, well, he can also electrocute you. It's like, that's not fair. You can't do, like,
it's like, well, yours gets like 3, so why can't mine have 2?
Right. It does always become this negotiation. But yeah, like, I feel like if we're talking about a creature that could hypothetically exist, you don't usually see multiple types of that kind of defense mechanism or attack mechanism. Like, they usually have one kind of main one, and you don't get death gas and lightning.
Yeah.
Badass, though.
It is believed that its venom is strong enough to instantly corrode metal.
Damn.
Yeah, so it would just kill you like that, and I'm assuming that the venom it would shoot at you or spit at you would be the same as what is, like, on their exterior, so that touching them would assuming it would all be the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's like alien xenomorph stuff. Like, if you cut them, they just start eating their acid blood. Yeah, that's not even venom. That's straight up acid. Just, like, eats through everything. Ugh.
And it is said that it inhabits the southwestern Gobi Desert, and that where it likes to live is near sources of water, but, you know, still very deserty.
Sure. And hopefully they don't contaminate the water. You suddenly go to, like, an oasis and you're your throat is just suddenly eating away at itself. Stupid worms.
So the death worm was the basis of a short story in Russia called the Olgoi Korkoi by Ivan Yevmrov.
I'm not saying anything.
I'm going to tell you that.
You nailed the first name.
Ivan. I can do Ivan.
Perfect.
So he is a Russian paleontologist and science fiction writer. And he was studying fossils in the Gobi Desert, and he heard legends of the death worm, but nobody had claimed to have seen it. So he wrote a whole, like, story about it.
Yeah, like, his paleontology wasn't getting a whole lot of play. He's like, I will make people remember death worm. I will show them what these. I like that. I was wondering how a Russian was, like, so enamored with something from Mongolia, but he's like, well, he was a paleontologist and he was studying in the Gobi Desert. It's like, oh, okay, perfect.
Well, and Mongolia is right underneath Russia, so they share a border with each other.
That's true. Yeah. Geography. I used to know geography. Well, still, yeah. I mean, they're big places. Still a long way to travel.
Yeah. And then in 1990 and 1992, Ivan Makarly led a small group of companions into the Gobi Desert for an expedition to search for the worm.
And they never came back?
He interviewed local witnesses and was trekking across remote desert regions. And he was inspired by Frank Herbert's novel Dune, a giant sandworm.
And can I just say, nailed it?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And in Dune, they use, like, rhythmic thumping to bring the worm to the surface. Mm-hmm. So he constructed a device to do that exact thing. And the, like, thumping mechanism was with small explosions.
So it's one use. So
he's just, like, trying to, like, explode the desert for this worm.
I will find them. They are creepy, and they are not one for the sunshine, but I will get them.
Yep. And as far as I know, I don't think he ever found it, and they did not get lost in the desert.
Oh. But, I mean, good.
I mean, yay.
Shoot. I, for some reason, wanted another, like, really creepy story in there. But, yeah, hooray! Good for them. He will find them. I was honestly disappointed with that just because I really wanted it. Even if he didn't find, like, the death worm, I was really hoping that his device would actually, like, work and bring worms to the surface of another type, where he's like, he's not the worm I was looking for, but also revolutionary technology.
But there's worm.
Indeed.
I didn't think worm. Is...
Yes. Book shows just shows that science fiction writers are often very good or whatever. I am a different Ivan from the previous Ivan. I don't write books. I read them. Dune. I like Dune.
Ivan is very good reader.
Ivan is, yes. The first Ivan, very good writer. This Ivan, good reader. I like your Russian there, though. You speak Russian? Are you from Minsk? Oh. Hey, we also have no. These also work. You're doing good.
Thank you. In 2005, zoological journalist Richard Freeman mounted an expedition to hunt for the death worm, but also came up empty-handed.
No.
He also interviewed eyewitnesses and investigated alleged sightings, and his conclusion were that tales of the worm's powers had been basically reported sightings that likely involved pieces of a worm lizard or, you know, other species of snake or like amphibian type animals. More specifically, the worm lizard, which has no arms or legs and looks like a snake, but also looks like a little sausage.
Oh, somebody would describe him like a little sausage. I just want to pick him up and hold him. And he's like, yeah, just
my little. He would hold it out with my arm outstretched, like away from me, but like, look at it.
Yeah, look at this little guy.
Like kids, when you like when they show you stuff and they're like, look at it, and they like shove it in your face, like that is just how I would hold it because I wouldn't want it like that close to me, but I'd be like, look at it, it's cute,
like little kids,
like close to me though,
little kids who like videos where they bring like a random like rat or a raccoon into the house and like, mom, I found a dog, and you're like, oh my god, that's not a dog, put it down,
that's not a dog, put him down.
Yeah, don't put it down.
Isn't it cute? I named him Scruffles.
Oh, that doesn't look like a Scruffles, but there's okay, you little armadillo looking piece. Oh god, it bit me.
Yep. And in 2006 to 2007, Destination Truth, which I don't know if you've ever watched that show.
I've definitely heard of it. I'm pretty sure my mom's watched an episode or two. Destination.
He conducted an expedition to look for the Mongolian death worm as well.
Fuck yeah.
Which basically on the show, for anyone who does not know, it's on the Discovery Channel. And this guy just goes to like random locations around the world to like discover its secrets and stuff like that. So he's like, I know about this location and people talk about it like this and we're going to find the truth.
Do they ever find the truth? My favorite part is the show title.
Most of it is that it's just like, we don't find any new information.
Yeah, but isn't it? Well, and it's, yeah, it, like, it's fine because it's mostly just to have content about, like, look at this weird thing that people believe in. It's like,
well, and he does like a lot of research for it and will give like a lot of historical context. Like, it's a great educational program.
Sure. I just love that the title implies their destination is truth. But the show is the adventure. So do they ever reach truth? No, but that's their destination.
They're going for that destination and they have yet to reach it.
Exactly.
That's all about the journey.
Exactly. That's why I'm like, I always tell people that I'm pretty skeptical. Like if I don't, you know, see real evidence of stuff, whatever. But like, I still like going on ghost hunts and stuff. I still like listening to and learning about cryptids and whatnot because it's fun. It's interesting. It's like, even if I never, I would love to find like actual shit like that. And if I never do, I will still enjoy the journey.
Yeah.
Destination Truth.
And then a New Zealand TV entertainment reporter, David Ferrier, took part in an expedition in August of 2009 and also came up empty-handed. And he conducted interviews with locals who claimed to have seen the worm and mentioned that most of the sightings of the death worm peaked in the 1950s. So it is possible that this worm existed and then became extinct.
Okay.
Which would be why they can't find it now.
Well, and I find that really intriguing just because usually when you hear stuff like that, like especially there was a resurgence of like an alien craze in like the 90s and it usually tapers off in like the 80s 90s because of things like, you know, videotape, television, and the internet. So like these things suddenly spread like wildfire and then they kind of fizzle out but in the 50s that's intriguing. I mean, we still had television, but
yeah,
interesting. Okay.
Yeah,
I do find that quite fascinating and compelling.
Yeah. So while many expeditions have been done and exploration has been attempted, no one has any hard evidence of the death worm.
Well, and I'll tell you this, in terms of cryptids, usually they're like going back to the chupacabra again, it's kind of like maybe a dark cave, but usually kind of hot, almost like kind of tropical areas. So they're usually like out in the woods. Bigfoot, big goddamn creature just walking around in the woods. The death worm is a little different because it's smaller and it's in the desert where people aren't likely to just be as much. And
yeah,
potentially
it is a needle in a haystack.
Right. Exactly.
Sort of like search.
Yeah. There again, you can kind of just be taking a poop in the woods and see Bigfoot just walking on another ridge across from you in the mountains. But you'd really have to search. Literally, it's like a needle in a haystack, but it's giant dunes of sand.
Yeah. And with that, I will give you pop culture references for the Mongolian death worm, since they don't have any other information on it.
Oh, no.
With which the number one being Dune.
Okay. So the worm from Dune itself is based on the death worm?
Yep.
No shit.
Yeah.
That's
yeah, awesome. I know. It's... Granted, I would say that a lot of artistic license with the size of the worm was taken for Dune, because if I am not mistaken, the worm in that is gigantic.
Very, yeah. Like, to the degree that, for anyone who hasn't seen the movie, like, when some of the characters can ride these worms, and I don't just mean like a bull, like, it's the size of a train, and they stand on the top of it. Yeah, so, I mean, it's... They are the absolute antithesis of the way we describe this worm.
Yeah.
And even like this worm, as in terms of worms, would be huge. Like the death worm itself is huge for a worm. This one is like a building tipped over.
Yeah. And they had a similar one on an episode of SpongeBob, the Alaskan bullworm. If you remember that episode, although that worm did not kill anybody because this was a children's show.
No, didn't do it on screen, at least.
Not as far as we're aware.
Can I guess number three?
Yes.
Beetlejuice.
No.
No, is that not even on the list? Shut up! What?
But like you had mentioned earlier about Tremors... And they were the inspiration for that.
Nice. Excellent. That makes a lot of sense. Sure.
There was a Mongolian deathworm TV film on the Sci-Fi Channel in May of 2010.
No kidding. What, ran for three episodes?
Probably. It was a TV film, so probably like 2 hours.
Okay. I missed that. My bad. Yeah, TV film.
Monster of the Week included an example adventure in which three Mongolian death worms hatched from a crate at a museum.
That's kind of cute.
And Ark Survival Evolved contained a creature in its expansion Scorched Earth, which had a lot of ties to the Mongolian death worm and the sandworm from Dune.
That makes sense, sure.
And then the manga series Dandadan has a Mongolian death worm, which was being mistaken for another cryptid, the Tushchinko, which is similar.
Which is similar, but Japanese.
Yeah.
Does Japan have a lot of deserts? I'm not sure they have any deserts.
Yeah. I don't believe they do.
Weird.
Japan is like way larger than in my mind I think it is.
Yeah, it looks small on a map, but it's bigger than I think most people give it credit for.
Yeah. And that is the death worm. Isn't even
on the list. Where is this? Where is this list from? I'm calling out the source. Is it just Wikipedia in general?
I actually got that one off of Wikipedia.
Well, then those nerds aren't doing their friggin' jobs, because I'm just Beetlejuice, man. Come on. They even had a cartoon show. They had the worms in there. They're not exactly the same, but I'm almost certain that might not count, because I'm fairly certain that the worms in Beetlejuice were just because Tim Burton was a fan of Dune. Like, I'm pretty sure he just sort of threw them in there because they're a direct reference to Dune. But still, it's a separate thing.
Yeah.
Are you looking at them? They're quite different. They've got like the three heads. They're sort of the Dune worm mixed with like an alien xenomorph, where they have like the mouth inside the mouth thing, but it's very Tim Burton. Something, there's even something kind of similar in Nightmare Before
Christmas. Yeah, so they would be from that. So yeah, I don't know.
Well, because I am thinking about it now. It might not technically count as a reference because, like I said, I'm almost certain the Beetlejuice worm is a direct reference to Dune. So technically the Beetlejuice worm isn't based on the death worm itself. It's based on, but I'm just saying it's the same worm. I'm just irritated that Beetlejuice isn't mentioned. That's all. It's a great series. The second one was okay.
I haven't seen any of them, so I have no opinion.
You'd probably love the first one, and you'd like the second one if you loved the first one.
Okay.
And the cartoon show, you can just forget about it. It was just a cash grab.
Got it.
It's like a lot of 90s cartoon shows. They had a popular product, and they're like, let's get toys out of it. It's capitalism. Sorry, what were we talking about?
It is.
I've gone off on a whole weird tangent.
That is all I have for us today. Wow.
That was shorter than I expected, only in that I didn't interrupt quite as much as I normally would, being that excited for that sort of cryptid. But it's been a long week. I'm tired.
It has been.
Yeah. Well, I have to say that I'm just aside from the taste, I'm so pleased at how many times Dune ended up getting referenced based on like where I really thought it was a dumb thing to like tie the pairing to, but now I am just absolutely very pleased. I am going to give the Cinnamon Toast a 10. Well, because it could be better, but I made it, so I'm gonna give it.
I'd give it a solid 9.
Okay.
Because it's like, I feel like it's pretty good, but I also feel like it would have been better if it was on Texas toast.
That's like okay, yeah.
Thicker slice of bread, and I was like, you know, this is good, but it could have been better.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. Where I'm like, to be a 10. I think I would have had to have spent a bit more time on the specific ratio of sugar to cinnamon. I think I needed a little bit more sugar and like, I don't know, like a better kind of butter somehow, if that makes sense. Like almost like a honey butter to kind of accentuate the sweetness. Yeah. But
like the butter they have at Texas Roadhouse.
Yes. Yes. Oh my God. They're like muffins and those are fresh from the oven. And then the butter. Yeah. Oh my God. It's so good. Oh, you hit exactly what I was talking about. And I will say that mine would probably be either a 6 or a 7, but I have to give a shout out to Great Harvest Bread Co. right here in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. I wasn't going to, but I got a fresh loaf of their honey wheat bread, and it definitely elevated. So yeah, if I'd had that honey butter as well, oh my God. And then I did toast it. But now that you mention it, the only thing I would have changed is if I could like bake it at home and then cut it thicker so that it like really stoked up. Because not that I'm complaining. I'm just, it's very thin. And that's like, if I could have gotten a fresh one just like made for me.
Yeah.
The drink, I'm going to give a 5. Well, I'm going to say a 6. Or no, hold on. I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm going to give it a 5. Just because, like you were saying earlier, I don't think I would ever order anything like this. I don't think that this is the kind of drink for me. But the way it gets elevated is, oddly enough, with kind of the bitterness of the vermouth and the vodka itself, I think it actually pairs pretty well with Cinnamon Toast. So I think the whole thing for me would be like a 7, because it's the cinnamon, the drink is almost like a palate cleanser with the sweetness of the cinnamon bread. And I have to admit, I think in a weird way, it actually kind of worked.
Yeah, I am not a very big dry martini fan, so I would probably give the drink a 4. So with the pairing together, I would probably give it a 6, because I do agree that it is more of like a palate cleanser, but definitely not something I would choose on my own, nor would I pick again.
Agreed. Well, and I guess the only reason I stress that is we've definitely had some where pairings bad, like treats bad, drinks bad, and they're even worse together. So like, luckily, yeah. So luckily, this one's kind of like
off my tongue.
Oh God, yeah. I don't remember what the pairing was exactly, but I still remember the Bud Light episode, and I just, oh God, I think it was just beer and peanuts, but the peanuts couldn't save the beer.
No, they could not.
Sorry, Bud Light. It just, sorry, sorry, America. Well, America kind of hates Bud Light at the moment, I guess.
And we hate a lot of things.
We do. We're really, that's kind of our biggest export. It's just hating stuff. And just hate. Yeah, we seem to just. Yeah, on that note. Like, so anyways, listeners, if you have anything other than hate, well, I mean, you can send some hate our way. I haven't said that in a while, but yeah, try to say something so that it makes me cry. You can email us at peculiarpairingspod@gmail.com. You can find us on the app formerly known as Twitter at Peculiar Pair Pod. You can find us on Instagram at Peculiar Pairings Pod. And please check us out on Patreon.
We are everywhere.
And if you don't have, you know, some bucks you can toss our way through Patreon, take a moment, you know, just like one little second, that's all it takes. You can give us a like on whatever platform you listen and give us a little review that says, I love them a lot. They're great. And they make my day go faster. And their pairings aren't always that great, but that's okay. I still love them. You know, you can do that. That's fine.
Yeah. Maybe. Send us a little something.
Yeah. Just say, yeah, if you're having a good day, tell us that you're having a good day. Just use it as just like a sounding board to just say anything you want. Just hit 5 stars.
Yeah.
It'll be easier. Well, Celine, do you know what we're doing next week?
Yes. We are actually going to be doing a two-parter. Uh-oh. And that we are going to be talking about William Hurley, which is another Drew pick.
Oh, okay.
And then we are going to follow that up with the Smiley Face Killers. Or Smiley Face Killer.
Wait, is it a two-parter, though? But, like, it's a different topic? Or is it? You know what? I'm not going to ask any more questions. Okay. Now I'm excited. Hurley, like, from the guy from Lost?
No. I'll give you the connection in that he is one of the victims of the Smiley Face Killers.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
And, yeah.
Okay, that makes
sense. And I believe... If I am not mistaken, which we will find out in a week, his disappearance is what really like sparked the connection with everything, if I am remembering correctly.
Okay. Is this different than, because we've talked a little bit about like smiley face, like murders in the past.
Yes. We talked about this on our episode about the drownings in Chicago.
Right. Okay.
And then we also talked on an episode with early on Wednesday when they covered the Smiley Face Killers. We talked about it then.
Yeah.
We've not talked about it on our own.
Gotcha. Okay. Interesting. Well, now I'm excited. And thank you, Celine. And thank you everybody for listening. We'll see you next week. We hope that you liked it and we'll see you on the next one. So thank you. Bye-bye.
DCI McAllister.
Listen, something's come in. 33-year-old male, name of Andrew Fairfield, found dead a few days ago.
As you know, I am doing a psychological study of the crew here on the base for Keone Industries to help them understand and improve base life during winter.
His body was found at the bottom of a small ravine, about a 30-minute walk away from the Antarctic base he'd been working at.
You know, life on the base means, it's close to 6 months without light. That does things to people.
That study that he was doing, to watch us and then set off us like mice around this special little experiment.
He told me he was there to stress them out.
You know, he was secretly recording people.
Drew clearly talks shit on his recording. Some of it was true, some of it was his opinions.
I can't sleep, I can't close my eyes knowing that someone among us did this.
Nobody's getting to the base and nobody's leaving that base for months. The investigation is going to have to be done remotely.
How many people are on this base?
16 on this one. Someone amongst them is our killer.
Experience Cold Tapes, the murder mystery podcast game. Figure out the killer for a chance to win £10,000. Start your investigation at coldtapes.com. T's and C's apply.